had been corresponding over the years, and she'd come to stay with us, and that she should come and live with us for a few months because she wanted to come to New York to dance and to audition and to be here, that it made sense for her to live with us. And so she came here, and with the idea of perhaps getting a little job in a restaurant or something and auditioning for ballet companies. She was a wonderful guest, you know, just a wonderful, quiet, kept to herself kind of young lady. Well, I remember one day she came home and said that she had been walking down the street, and a man walked up to her in a friendly enough manner, as people do in New York, and asked her if she was an actress. And she said, no, she wasn't. But he said, if you can act, though, there's something about the look that I'm seeing in you that would fit into a project I'm working on. Obviously, since I wasn't there, I don't know how he approached it, but I imagine from eventually having talked to this fellow that he was very charming and very unthreatening, non-threatening. And obviously, he's a man in his mid-50s with, I presume, a beard and long hair, kind of an interesting-looking fellow, though I haven't seen him in person. He suggested to her that if she had any acting ability, he was a film director who had done quite a number of films and was looking for a young people to be in an upcoming film about college students. And he gave her his number and asked her to give him a call and leave her number so that he might talk to her and perhaps set up a meeting where they could talk about and just get to know each other so that he could see a little more if she's the kind of gal that might work out in this film, and she could learn a little bit more about him. She came home and presented this to us, that she had met this fellow, and we said, our feeling was, my wife and I, that this was not the way things really happen in the real world, that this was not the appropriate way for people to begin working on a film project. If he wanted to get her number and have his casting agent or his producers call her or get her a script or something, but the notion of him meeting her at a coffee shop at Starbucks to get to know each other better struck us as being inappropriate. She, on the other hand, felt it was appropriate, and she took a bit of exception to our judgment about the whole thing. That night, apparently, as I was to learn the next morning, he called her at about 1:30 in the morning. She came the next day out of her room and said, you know, it was a little strange. He called last night at 1:30 in the morning. I didn't answer the phone, but I saw it was 1:30, and he just left a message. Give me a call because I really actually set things up. She thought that was a little strange, and I thought it was quite strange that he would be calling her at 1:30 in the morning. She then eventually did make a contact with him, and that's when they set up the first Starbucks meeting. But prior to the first Starbucks meeting, I asked her for his number, and I called him. I called his voicemail because obviously the only number he gave her was a voicemail. It was not a house with a machine or anything. It was obviously a voicemail. And I said to him that I was the host of this young lady, and that I knew who he was, and I respected his work, and had for a number of years. But I thought that the calling at 1:30 in the morning was a little strange and puzzling to me. And also, the idea of having a series of meetings with this young girl to decide if they were going to work together without any kind of producer or casting officer going on, I also thought was a little puzzling to me. And I hoped that he would call me back, which he did within a few hours. And he called me back. He was very charming and in a very candid way. He didn't seem to be putting on any airs or anything. He was very charming. And he was apologetic about having called at 1:30 in the morning. He said that he sometimes just leads a very crazy writing life and it loses track of time, and wasn't even aware that it was 1:30 in the morning when he made the call. He also explained that he was very into working with non-professionals and that he had met many people on the streets in places where he had engaged with people who had turned out to be the kind of people he could work with in his films. So I pretty much said, okay. I mean, it was nothing much I could do. I didn't want to dissuade him or to, order him not to hang out with the girl. I just said I wanted to just clear the air a little bit about all this. And she went off and met with him, and that's when he, this comes back to where he gave her his diary, his published diaries, and for this particular year, and also told her to watch some of his films, and that they were going to get together after she had done that. And she came home and did read his stuff and watched one of the films, I presume. I mean, she did this in the privacy of her room. And then the next day announced that she was going to be having dinner with her friend. And at that point, we both, my wife and I, felt apprehensive about this whole scenario that was unfolding between them. She was obviously a very vulnerable young lady. She had what appeared to be a pretty low self-esteem. She was excited about the fact that he found her to be so fascinating and so full of life and vitality. A kind of energy which I didn't myself see in her. She didn't strike me as having the presence of an actress, which was, you know, because if she did, I would understand a little more about what his interests were in her. She seemed to be she looked like the kind of a person that had been crying recently at all times. You know, she had a sad face. She was attractive, though not dazzlingly beautiful, with a little dancer's body, a little kind of, you know, nose a little up in the air and walking in that kind of dancery posture. But, you know, interesting-looking person, but I certainly never sensed the presence of an actress in her, and that puzzled me also about why he had called. At a certain point, I decided to call her mother to explain to her mother what was going on, because we just didn't really feel that it was in her best interest to be meeting with this fellow again or in a series of visits. So I called her mother down in Atlanta, a woman who I've known for a few years, and I've liked an eccentric woman in her own right, a kind of woman who comes up to New York and just says, oh, we're going to go just walk around for 10 hours, we're going to see what kind of trouble we can get into. I mean, she just comes to New York, and you could feel that when she came to New York, a secret energy, a secret life that had never been fulfilled in her was just bursting out of her. Woman of, I guess, about 50. Attractive woman, married to a guy down there in Atlanta. And I said to her, we've got this situation where... and she knew, it turned out that she knew all about these meetings, because she and her daughter had been in very close contact on the telephone. The daughter had a cell phone. And even when they were in the Starbucks, they had two telephone conversations while she was sitting at the table. So she was totally aware of what was going on. And as she expressed to me, she thought it was just fine. And she said, you know, I appreciate y'all's concern for Rebecca and everything. And we know that there's all kinds of dangers out in the world. But she said, you know, Rebecca's got to find her own way. She's got to experience life and see what it's about. And she said, I've got no problem with her. If this is a lonely old guy who wants to hang out with a pretty young thing, and she said, that's fine. That's okay. I found this amazing, and I didn't engage with her or debate with her about it. She said, you know, she's going to learn a lot from all this. And she didn't really think he was interested in having her in his movie. She thought he was a 56-year-old guy who wanted to get close and sniff up a little girl. And she said, that's okay. She didn't think for a second he was on the up and up, but she didn't care, because she was impressed about the fact she had read the journals and done some research into him, and she convinced herself that he was a big deal movie director. And she thought that for this big deal movie director to take a liking to this young lady, whether or not he wanted to use her in a film was still a good experience for the young lady. I said, well, I guess that's okay. Again, I was not there to debate with her or to tell her what she should think. I was there to get her to, you know, sign off on this thing. And she revealed her own attitude towards men's motives and men's sexual obsessiveness through revealing that her own husband had been a enormous Scotsman and had cheated on her for many years. I had no idea until that moment that that was the case. But she just said that that her daughter was totally aware of this kind of behavior on the part of men. And that was one of the reasons that she thought her daughter should not, was aware of what men are looking for, what men are out for. And that was another one of her reasons to be less afraid, I guess, of him as a sexual predator, because her daughter and she are aware that all men are about that. Which seemed hardly a reason to me to encourage her daughter to have this kind of experience. But she said, ultimately, that's what she believed would be the case, that we shouldn't worry about a thing. I then called him back and said, I just talked to the mother of this gal, and this young lady, and she seems to think that this is just fine, that this is okay. And so any apprehension I had about the propriety of these meetings is moot, you know, because the mother says it's okay. So I just left on the message, have a ball, and I hope it leads to a very creative, you know, experience for her and for you. And I then told Rebecca the same thing, that I'm sorry that I had meddled, because her mother made it clear that she should do that. And then she prepared for her next meeting with him. And between the time I had talked to her and the next meeting was to take place, my wife, who had initially said, I go along with all this, had a change of heart. She felt it was wrong that the girl, while she was staying at our house, should not be meeting with this fellow. That given who she was and the unnaturalness of the situation, not least fed by that 1:30 in the morning call, it just didn't feel right, and she did not want it to go down. She called the mother and told the mother that I don't think this should be happening. I don't think it's right, and I think Rebecca's being naive, and I think you're being naive to think that this is an appropriate kind of meeting. Well, that led, unfortunately, to a very unpleasant conversation between my wife and Mary, which got pretty ugly, and in which Mary felt that her daughter was being judged, her daughter was being vilified as being naive. Even as my wife said, she seemed to interpret naive as stupid and didn't like that very much. She felt she and her daughter were being accused of being stupid and not knowing about the world, and that we were meddling in their lives. And she at some point said, you know, as far as she was concerned, Rebecca was just renting a room here. Because it's true, even though there was no talk of money initially, after Rebecca moved in, the mother did want to send us $100 a week, because she felt that was a reasonable thing to stay here. But she then said she thought Rebecca was just renting a room, and that was really none of our business what Rebecca did. And my wife said, well, that's not going to work. It is our business. This is not something that I would want my daughter to be doing. As long as she's staying here, I don't want her to do that. And they had a pretty nasty little conversation, which ended with hanging up. And the next thing that transpired, several hours later, the young lady came out and was very tearful and overwhelmed by the whole situation. She had talked to her mother. And she announced that she was going to call off any plans to visit with them again, because she didn't want to jeopardize her welcome in our house, you know, and because of this situation. So it would be better for her to call off the meeting. And she called him and said she would not be able to meet with him. I think she explained to him that the family that was, you know, she was, that were her hosts, disapproved. And that he was very sanguine about it. He said, well, okay, maybe sometime down the line, maybe when you're older, or, you know, we can, maybe there'll be another project, and maybe we can talk again. You know, there was, I felt tremendous empathy for her, because she was frightened. She was lonely. She was, you know, she even said to me at one point that, which really broke my heart, she said that she had tried to call home and talk to her father last night, but he didn't come home. Her eyes were red, and she was crying uncontrollably. And I tried to console her. because she was just distraught. And I tried to console her by saying, hey, this really was inevitable. When things happen where people have different views of the reality of the situation, there's going to be a conflict, and the conflict can be worked through. You know, but you shouldn't feel that this conflict was avoidable in that regard. You shouldn't feel that you're being put upon by circumstances that you can't control. I mean, these things have to happen and have to play themselves out, because we just saw this meeting with him in a different way than you and your mother did. And I'm not sure who's right or wrong, but I know we saw it different ways, and that we just have to get through it. And she relaxed and became happier, and I think got through it. And then she went off to Washington the next day to visit the old school where she had been and where my daughter was now in residence. And what transpired in the few days that she was there was just a terrible experience for my daughter. She kind of cut my daughter off. She was unfriendly. This is one of her closest friends in the world. She reunited with some other friends down there who she had known and became very exclusionary and very cold. And my daughter was just really overwhelmed by all this. Didn't quite know why it was happening. And it led to a very difficult time between them. They didn't fight or anything, but my daughter just didn't understand why she was being treated with such coldness. My daughter was just calling me from Washington saying, I just don't want her to come home to my house, Dad. Here was this girl who was sharing her room, who was scheduled to come back up here for Thanksgiving and to spend the next few months here, and was treating my daughter like a stranger. And, like, you know, my daughter said, I don't want her in my room. And I trust my daughter that there was nothing vindictive or inappropriate about her response to this girl. The girl was not treating her nicely, and she didn't want her here. But we didn't want to make a confrontation. We didn't want to make it ugly, just get out kind of thing. We had to figure a way to end the visit, and we did by telling the parents that the building really was not going to allow us to have a guest any longer. She'd been here for over a month, and our building doesn't allow you. It's very structured and full of rules. So we were able to arrange a situation where the young lady was going to leave on Thanksgiving Day. Her father happened to be coming up from Atlanta, and he was going to take her into his hotel. And that would pretty much be the end of our association with her. But at that point, I began to wonder what had happened here. What had gone down here? And who is this guy? So I looked around in the room, in my daughter's room, and I found the publication in which his diaries had been presented, had been published. And I carefully read these diaries. The journal begins it's a year-long journal, and it begins the first of the year in either 94 or 95. And it begins with a kind of a leitmotif which goes throughout the journal, which are descriptions of his phone calls with major players in Hollywood. It's you know, he has phone calls throughout the day with his close associates, who are persons like Warren Beatty, Barry Levinson, Jeff Burns, Harvey Keitel, Bobby De Niro. I mean, he seems to know everybody. Milos Forman, Barbette Schroeder, Carol Rice, of course. And he talks about being a close friend of the great football star Jim Brown, and through Jim Brown getting to know O.J. Simpson, and spending a number of evenings in kind of sexual orgies at Jim Brown's house, in which Simpson was present. And he kind of proudly also indicates that he was the only white guy there, which is interesting and fits very into what one would imagine the persona one would imagine he likes to project, that he's cool enough to swing with these guys. That kind of fit into a, made me a little more wary of him as a suitable Starbucks crony for this young girl who's staying with us. I read in his journal about a meeting he had at the Peninsula Hotel. Is that a very grand hotel in Beverly Hills? So he's having dinner with Barbette Schroeder and Agnieszka Holland. You've heard of that person? It's an international film director. And Tom Luddy. And he says in his journal that he's at the Peninsula Hotel, where he proudly announces he's staying on credit, that he says he's always in debt, and he's always overextended, and he's always staying in the fanciest places he can stay without knowing how he's going to pay for them, you know. He likes that about his own lifestyle. And he said they had a half hour at least to come from wherever they were coming to meet him for dinner. He only had to come down from his room, but he was a half hour late. He analyzes it as being, he says, obviously it's a kind of Freudian thing about exerting my own self-importance, you know, showing other people I'm important. So I was feeling I had been drinking and also wasn't sure if I had been blown off. I had just had an enormous fight with my wife, and there was a tremendous amount of tension around here. And I just called him, knowing I wouldn't get him, but I left a message. I somehow remembered his number, and I left a message saying, it's Larry Block, and I just wanted you to know that maybe in the future you should be a little more, think a little more deeply about what strangers you interact with. I said, you interacted with a stranger that's impacted in my life, and my daughter's life, and my family's life. didn't mean to be accusatory, but I said, we've had a lot of falling out about all this. You reminded me on several occasions, and even in your writings, that you're interested in blurring that line between life and art. So I said, well, that's going to happen here, because the life that you brought into my life will now express itself in my art in some way. And I ended it in a kind of edgy, slightly cryptic, statement. And you'll know about that art soon enough. And I hung up. So he called me back about an hour later, and he must have kept my number originally, because I didn't leave my home phone number at that time. I had left it another time. I left my voicemail, but he called my house. And he was very anxious to talk, and he's a very warm, engaging fellow, mind you. But he was anxious to straighten out what had happened, and to make it clear that he thought it was just a bizarre notion that a person such as him, who's directed 9 films, which is a little more than I thought he had, would conceivably do anything improper with a 17-year-old girl. He just thought it was a bizarre notion, and that he would never do anything like that improperly. I had read in his journals that surely he liked young people. He was trying to obviously recapture his own youth. He was trying to capture the voices of young people. That fit into what he said. A lot of what he said on the phone was very much what I had heard from her. So there was something that was completely candid and honest about the guy. But he felt it was, he wasn't accusatory, but he said, I just want you to know that I never for a second thought there was anything. That's why I pursued it, because I didn't feel anything improper in what I was doing. And I didn't want to be accusatory or be confrontational with him. I didn't dwell on the 1:30 in the morning call. But the thing in our conversation that was most strange, I think, and again, I was never combative or confrontational, I said to him, perhaps you don't have children. He said, I do. He said, I have an 11-year-old daughter. I said, well, then maybe you can understand it. And then he revealed very casually that his 11-year-old daughter had just called him a week before and told him that she was going to spend the weekend with her 15-year-old boyfriend. And he said, hey, have a ball. So I said, well, Wilhelm Reich would love you, man. And A.S. Neal, they believed in young juvenile sexuality. So obviously, he's a guy who doesn't, we even talked about Roman Polanski and his connection with the young girl. But when he told me about his 11-year-old daughter, encouraging her to go off and spend the weekend with a 15-year-old boyfriend, I thought that was a little strange, don't you? I said, you sound like a great guy. I loved your journal. You're a great guy. But you can understand, I hope, how there are certain darknesses in the world which also come out of these, which have this shape. And even though I don't really think that that's what's happening here, I could understand my wife's apprehension. Even though I was personally willing to sign off on it after I talked to the mother. And he was a little surprised, too, after the mother approved of having her daughter meet with him and get to know him, that we got involved. He wasn't accusatory, but he was almost on the edge of it. I could almost feel a little bit of his impatience of, why are you meddling, And yet, as I said to him, it seems to me that you're the kind of guy that doesn't define your own limits. That's the way you live and find, so you can't always know what it is that you're capable of in any situation. And he had to admit to that, He prides himself, one of his descriptions of himself is, as being kind of a madman, being a wild man, being a sexual animal, that kind of thing. I thought it was really strange that on the one hand, that he was claiming that he would never, could never imagine having any kind of improper relationship with a 17-year-old girl. He had too much to